Welcome to the Command Line Podcast for April 22nd, 2013. I'm your host, Thomas Command Line Gideon, a self-proclaimed hacker, eccentric, and hacktivist. This is my show about the practice and profession of programming, drawing on well over a decade of professional experience and a lifetime spent hacking, the intersection of technology with society and public policy, and anything else clever, elegant, or funny that catches my mind as a diehard technology geek. This episode is a feature cast. In it, as promised, I have a rant about the problems, one that I haven't actually seen other people discuss, with the proposal before the standards-making body for the underlying language of the web. That's HTML, and the standards-making body is the W3C. This is for the encrypted media extension, which is a way to bring DRM, essentially, into the web. I also have a new hacker word of the week. First, though, I suppose a little bit of context around the rant. I think it's a useful reminder that as much as we've been able to stem the tide against bad thinking when it comes to interfering with the new norms in a post-digital, post-network world, that doesn't mean necessarily that those who want to exercise a veto on innovation, the status quo players wanting to hold the line and keep things as they are, or at least check them very slowly and be able to, as Cory Doctorow so poetically puts it, exercise a urinary tract infection approach to this whole space of new ideas, new services, and new ways of being and doing online, that is in drips and drabs and little spurts, each costing an exorbitant amount at a time. Even as much as we've been able to perhaps push back in a similar fashion, it doesn't it really doesn't address the core underlying urge to do these sorts of things, to try to exert that control. And as much as we hear balance enter into the discussion, this may be a future rant about the space of copyright and kind of where we've been at over the last handful of years versus historically, as much as we may hear rhetoric about balance, don't be fooled. It's not about balance. Don't be fooled into complacency. Just when we think we've won things like SOPA and PIPA, CISPA comes back around, even though that's not really a copyright issue per se. And again, maybe I'll do a future feature on that, digging into that a bit more. But in this instance, what this rant is about is absolutely about the idea of the copyright maximalists coming into a space that I hope you'll be convinced really has traditionally been a reserve of open ways of doing things. The hacker word of the week comes from the jargon file, maintained by Eric Raymond at catb.org. Fryode. Noun. An excess of capability that serves no productive end. The canonical example is font diddling software on the Mac. See MacDink. The term describes anything that eats huge amounts of time for quite marginal gains in function, but seduces people into using it anyway. See also window shopping. The encrypted media extension made a splash a few weeks ago, then discussion around it has gone worryingly quiet. What is the encrypted media extension for HTML? It's a proposal to the W3C that has advocates for the open web concerned. EME is not strictly DRM, as it wouldn't directly bake locks themselves for digital content into the fabric of the web. Rather, it's a standard to which DRM modules, called content decoding modules, can be built by media companies and others. The idea is that if the browser encounters some protected media, something that the rights holder or distributor wants to have those locks on, rather than just being able to show it, as it does today, it could hand off to any number of installed CDMs that might be able to handle it. That's why I say it's not directly in the fabric of the web, but I'm not sure that semantic distinction makes sense. I'll unpack that a little bit. The implication is, too, that with
plugins today, if a suitable CDM is missing, the user could be prompted to install that CDM in order to see the media. The user experience, as far as I've been able to work it out, would be nearly identical, so it really isn't clear how this is manifestly different. Proponents, some surprisingly within the W3C itself, this is the web's standards-making body, say that this slight semantic twist avoids enclosing the web, and I'm really not sure how that follows. They also claim that somehow this is better than protected content requiring plugins. I simply disagree that all they have done is create a smaller, simpler interface, but one that in every other important respect is exactly like the situation we have for in protected media through the existing suite of plugins available for browsers on various operating systems. Browser makers won't entirely be free to implement all of these CDMs, at least not the most valuable ones. This is like Mozilla being unable to add some new bit of visual display functionality related to page layout or fonts or animations or vector graphics, any number of the other innovations that we've seen incorporated into this standard by the W3C. At least in this instance, they wouldn't be able to do so without asking for permission from some third party. That's kind of patently ridiculous. That's not been the way that these new novel features have emerged and been added into this very vibrant technology so far. In this instance, those third parties are likely to come from the content industry and be formed in the way that they operate, similar to the licensing bodies overseeing DVD and Blu-ray protection schemes. Even worse, they would probably be like the body responsible for H.264, a technology, whether you know it or not, you're using very much online, whether it's embedded in a browser or you're downloading media encoded in this very common format. H.264 doesn't necessarily include DRM, although it supports it, but it is patented rather heavily. There's a rather cumbersome patent pool around this that does require then this body to license it, at least media that wants to be encoded in it, for playback online. In this instance, they so far have done so for free, although there was some hand-wringing a little while ago that term of free end-user decoding might end. But more importantly, and what's often missed, is that the tool makers, those who actually make the video editing and video rendering tools and suites that want to output in this format and support it in that way, they do have to pay substantial license royalties in order to do so, regardless of the fact that asymmetrically the cost is not borne by all, that the end users don't have to pay every time they want to play a bit of this. That doesn't mean that there isn't some hefty costs involved. Even if for playback, CDM makers are generous like this and leverage a similar asymmetric model, which I very much doubt they will be at all, the risk of enclosing content creation from those otherwise using open tools is substantial. Even worse, like every other move to add content protection, this is not likely to work. No DRM scheme has withstood the cash-poor, time-rich hackers of the world. Even using advanced, heavy-duty cryptographic algorithms and approaches has not helped. In order for a player to work, in this instance, a CDM interacting with a browser, the critical bits, usually meant to be kept secret, the private keys or the secret keys of a crypto mathematic scheme, have to be shared with the player. No DRM scheme I'm aware of has avoided a dedicated attacker then from snagging these very keys. The most annoying scheme, one used with Blu-ray, allows keys to be updated from a central authority in case someone is able to get those decoding keys to unlock titles so they can be invalidated and new ones distributed. Unfortunately, this means that users are often affected, where previously, like with the DVD player, they wouldn't notice any updates coming down to a simple appliance. And that act of having to update their players, even if that's even possible, not everybody necessarily hooks them up or thinks that they should have to hook them up online in order to receive new security keys, is a substantial obstacle, a challenge at times, just to retain the ability to keep decoding and playing disks, something that most people would look at as a baked-in black box feature. This is a horrible cat and mouse game where the average person is the worst casualty. Even if a cracked key is immediately pulled and replaced, it doesn't really help, as a pirate only has to decode a movie once. Being able to distribute pirated content doesn't rely thenceforth in any way on being able to surmount that DRM. It's a one-time sunk cost. EME won't be any different despite claims to the contrary. Despite this superficial compartmentalization of content decoding modules, this is exactly about bringing traditional DRM to the browser. Somehow, having a web standard for handing off to a third-party bit of DRM isn't going to magically solve the technical problems inherent in DRM, and the massive upside for pirates to crack even a single copy, here most likely a web stream. I predict that if the encrypted media extension is approved, and even more unlikely implemented, then CDMs will simply be features of existing closed media players like Windows Media or Apple QuickTime or iTunes. I say that the odds of EME being implemented, at least in Firefox, are slim because Mozilla has spent years fighting for genuinely open video formats online. EME would be institutionalizing the outcome Mozilla has been fighting against, that rather than browsers being able to freely read media as they always have, they will have to seek approval and permission from third parties. Sadly, I fear Mozilla will be a sole holdout, that Apple, Microsoft, and Google, because of those tie-ins with an easy lift to implement CDM features in their existing products, all see no problem with EME having those pre-existing, as I said, hooks into the very idea of bringing more traditional media to users for pay. The agency of the organizations and companies that do make the browsers, though, is really the point here. Because DRM is exactly the wrong scenario for success with utilizing computer cryptography and the math behind it, and any break for a title is exactly the same as cracking every other single protected copy of that title, DRM has never been about piracy, or even, at its core, respecting the value of the works and those who create them. Rather, DRM is all about controlling innovation, especially existing players, against newcomers. The canonical example most critics of DRM trot out at this point in the argument is the history of compact disc versus digital video disc or digital versatile disc, DVD. Both are digital, high-quality formats with a decent storage ratio per disc. CDs have never widely had any sort of protection, whereas DVDs were specifically designed to require a license to unlock most titles for playback. Which of these begat pretty much an entire third-party industry supporting format, time, and device shifting? The ability to buy CDs and rip not just to MP3, but any number of formats with different advantages, all the way up through the audiophiles who like the compressive power of FLAC and other lossless codecs, preserving the crystal clear quality of CD audio, speaks to that diversity that anybody can come in and have the ability to enjoy the music they want. And these advantages have proven so powerful enough to overcome early attempts to re-enclose digital music. The ability to get unencumbered music for sources other than iTunes onto the very popular early wave device, the iPod. Now, I think I have a lot more options, but back in the day, really, that was the killer app that drove the state of the industry at that time. That ability to get in through the open door, No irony there, but the open formats and being able to shift those onto the iPod, which had to support those, allowed innovation to continue from any number of large and small music sellers, the pressure from which collectively is what pulled the market back to a place largely free of DRM for music. Despite a few attempts to fight legal threats to DVD copying software, that format largely remains locked to either appliances or blessed media software. And the appliances, even as I've indicated, often have become a bit of a joke that they, not for DVD so much, but in the successor formats, have to do things that we just don't want a media appliance to have to deal with. We just want it to play back the things that we want to play back. Ripping DVDs is still a bit of a pain, which has allowed prices to stay higher for longer, and the only real alternatives are equally crummy in the form of lockdown, on-demand, quote-unquote rentals, and limited online streaming. There are other examples, for instance, the insane creativity of indie game developers, especially those foregoing DRM, and choosing to focus that creativity on trying out new business models rather than locking off options. Big box game titles tend to stick to consoles or PCs. Porting from one to the other years after a title's popularity has faded is considered innovative. That's the height of inventiveness, rather than being opportunistic about platforms, promotion, and sharing. The history of the web suggests its spirit aligns most strongly with the example of CDs and that of these indie gamers. No one ever had to ask permission to view the source of a website, least of which because a browser maker who then was able to do so is free to extend that capability out to those end users who had the desire, the will, and the knowledge for the span of several decades now. And so they've even become accustomed to it that it's arguably normative to open up that capability in service of creating their own web pages. I'll do you even one better, though, because recently when I was mentioning this very idea, I talked about the admittedly kind of heavy lift involved in having your own dedicated web server somewhere, either out on a virtual host or co-located or something like that. I think things on reflection have evolved even further, that just that ability to share snippets of code that it really relied on that deep history of being able to share the open source of the web so freely has evolved into these ubiquitous embed codes for sharing media in much the same way. We don't need special capabilities in websites or browsers. It's just part of the very nature of the web to be able to do this. It's no longer necessary to have to know all of the web source code language, HTML, well enough to stand up a new page or have access to a server. You can just utilize services that take advantage of the very openness of the web itself. This is an openness that abides as a crucial feature for new uses like this very one. So how exactly should we expect the encrypted media extension for HTML to play out if it is indeed approved by the W3C? Tim Berners-Lee, still very much involved with that body and creator of the web originally, seems to think EME is worth an exception to the open spirit of the web. Explaining his support for it, he seems to consider media delivered by plugins a far greater evil than DRM and the enclosure of media online. Worry that he's fixed a bizarre false calculation in his head that bolting on a horrible closed feature onto the web somehow makes the combination more open than otherwise. Combining open and closed systems always results in an overall closed system. Sure, using Flash to stream video today is a closed-off part of the web, but having a standard mechanism for this is not the same as the previous fight for open format video. Open video was about having browsers directly support an agreed-upon open standard for encoding and decoding content, not a negotiation protocol for shipping some link to media off to a closed player. The outcome of that fight is another cause for worry here. The commercial browser makers were so invested in their proprietary formats like H.264 that we got a horrible compromise where a website creator has no idea whether the video he includes in his or her web page will be playable at all by the end user. Now we have content players involved, not just the direct creators of web technologies. Netflix recently was in the news for refusing to offer their service streaming on the web directly as opposed to through various appliance platforms and native apps. They've refused to do so until the encrypted media extension is approved and implemented. Whereas before, we had a hard enough time arguing about the open nature of the web amongst those who should be most concerned about the experiences of users and developers, now we have a pure media player involved who could care less about open standards. In Netflix's defense, if they did not hold with DRM, they would not get content deals. And I know it's a crummy situation to be in. Netflix is an innovator trying to struggle under an immense weight. So I don't want you to think that I'm throwing them under the bus too much. They actually do a lot of good things in the realm of open. But in this particular situation, they're on the wrong side. And I think they're pushing for the wrong team. They actually are yet another instance of DRM being used to control innovation, so much so that they in turn are exerting pressure on otherwise unaffected parties. Again, the web isn't about this sort of centralization and extension of power. Every day, developers are coming up with new sites and services, not because anyone has allowed them to do so, but because the bedrock standards and technologies of the web and the internet are open. This is not incompatible with copyright. It actually has very little to do with copyright one way or the other. Rights holders have the means to deal with occasional mistaken sharing, and law enforcers have plenty of resources to deal with commercial scale pirates. Accepting EME as a standard is an incredibly dangerous gamble, risking the established and still emerging media ecosystem for a scheme that is only open in the minds of some of its proponents. Worse, there is something at risk I haven't seen anyone else identify, let alone talk about. By any measure, the most popular video online is not the few risk-averse innovators just using it as a cost-effective means of serving traditional content. Mostly through YouTube, but also through any number of smaller video sharing services, the thing the web does for video better than any older media is support the smaller creators. Originally, and still predominantly, that means casual video takers uploading novel things they happen to capture for frictionless sharing. In the last few years, more resources have been spent trying to find models that allow more considered content, like videos with sustained narratives, or at least more structured formats. What attracted efforts like the dedicated channels on YouTube, experiments like Twitter's video sharing service, and more, isn't the prospect of locking up these bits of digital content. The value has already been proven in the model of being able to share, to spread, and to disseminate interesting things easily, so much so that some very smart people are convinced that there are ways to profit without actually tinkering with that core DNA, without actively trying to enclose the open nature of the web. If media platforms are strong-armed into only allowing protected media, what then happens to the existing far larger ecosystem of peer media? That's my worry, a variation on the H.264 licensing debate that I touched on, writ large. Instead of worrying about some particular format that can largely be worked around, the very heart of video on the web will be at risk. That's my case. That's my worry. These are a few of my supporting thoughts. Undoubtedly, you have some other fuel for the discussion that I haven't considered, perhaps some counterexamples, or maybe you largely agree, but for more nuanced and interesting reasons. Whatever the case, as always, if you'd like to share, send those to feedback@thecommandline.net, where I'll be happy to talk about them and disseminate them with everybody else through the show. That's going to do it for this episode. As always, I want to thank you for listening, and if you enjoyed the program, please do tell a friend, or go to the website at thecommandline.net and click on the support link for all the ways you can financially help out with the production of the show. If you have a question, suggestion, or correction, you can send those to feedback@thecommandline.net, or you can post those as a comment up on the website.
If you're away from your computer and the internet at the moment, call the listener comment line at area code 240-949-2638. If you need to get in touch with me securely, details of my public key pair can be found at thecommandline.net/gnupg-fingerprints.
The next show, which should be out in the feed next week, will be a newscast as usual. So until then, don't forget to hack your world.
I would like to thank the Internet Archive for media hosting and bandwidth. The views expressed on this program are my own, and where applicable, those of my guests, and in no way reflect those of my employer or anyone else. This show is produced from 100% recycled bits. Except where noted, permission to recycle those further is granted under the Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 United States license. That means you're free to change this show as much as you like, as long as you don't alter credits, and you share your changes under the same license.